Tonight I would like to spend some few moments with you, talking to you about I know what I want to talk about. I'm going to start out with marriage, because the gospel focuses itself on marriage. But I want to use marriage as a jumping off point, because the jumping off point comes from this question. Does the state have the right to define what marriage is or is not? Now, that question is actually part of a deeper one. Who gets to decide, ultimately, what is right and what is wrong concerning anything? You got to draw the line somewhere. And so the question really is going to become, how and on what basis do you draw the line between what is allowed and what is not allowed? Who gets to decide? Now, that might not sound like, you know, something that you ought to be hearing from in church. Maybe that should be in a political science lecture. But actually, it is. Because if you heard Jesus today, Jesus was drawing a line, a very religious line, in terms of what is marriage and what is not marriage. And so, what Jesus is doing then, what happens a lot of times with us is that we live in this culture that says, well, there is a separation of church and state. And please understand, I think that the separation of church and state is a very, very good thing. The problem is, when we take that a little further, and what we say then is, not only should the church and the state be separate, but religion should never have anything to say about anything concerning public life or public issues. Notice the difference. The difference between church and state and religion and public life. Let me tell you exactly how I understand it. When the framers of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence too, when they were crafting how we were to live together, because folks, the word politics, the definition of politics is, what are the procedures that are we going to use to live together in a city, in a country? How do we answer that? Who gets to draw the lines? When the framers were getting together, they had the background of England. And in England, right after King Henry VIII in the 16th century broke relationship with the Pope, what happened was that the king, who was the head of the government, he was like more than our president, okay? Because the king had absolute power, okay? He could order you executed, he could do anything he wanted. He became the head of the church. And so the Church of England began to be the state church. And so if you were anything but a member of the Church of England, you were against the king. And if you were against the king, you were his enemy and therefore liable to death. As a matter of fact, in 16th century England, if you were a Catholic, and if you went to a Catholic Mass or celebrated Catholic Mass, they would kill you because it was totally against the law. Because the Church of England was the state church. When our founders said there shall be separation of church and state, they meant that the state should never take the place of being the leader of the church and make a national church. But now that had never said anything. They never meant for it that the Bible or the scriptures or our Christian tradition should have absolutely nothing to say about how we ought to live together. They presumed, the founders presumed, that that would be normal. As a matter of fact, and this always gets to me, whenever you read the Declaration of Independence, the Declaration of Independence, whether you know it or not, it is a religious document. Now, you might have never thought about the Declaration of Independence as a religious document, but listen to the first few lines of what it says. We hold these truths to be self-evident. Now, what does self-evident mean? It means we don't have to prove them. You can take them on faith. You have to have faith in these things. Now, what are those things that you have to have faith in? We hold these truths that you have to have faith in. That all men are created equal. Now, why do you have to have faith in that? We know that's not true. Are all of us equal in terms of intelligence? Are some of us fatter and some of us skinnier? Are some of us better or worse? The fact that all of us are created equal is not self-evident, unless you're talking about human dignity. And where is that in the human body? In Christianity and in Judaism, that's the only religious traditions that hold all people to be created equal. Go to a Muslim country and say, I as a Christian, I'm equal to a Muslim. You'll find out real quick that that's not true. And you go to different countries and different religious backgrounds, and that's not true. All people are not created equal. And that they are endowed by their creator. They're endowed with certain inalienable rights. Rights that you yourself can't even give away. And what are those rights? The right to life, to liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Where did they get that? Comes straight from the scriptures, straight from the Bible. Now, why am I talking like this? Because whenever you decide, wherever you decide to draw the line, you have to start somewhere. And the question is, where? Who gets to decide what's right and what's wrong? Now, some people say, well, let the people vote on it. Eh, sounds good. Unless the people are a little quirky in themselves. I like to say, you know what pure democracy is? Pure democracy is five animals voting on what to have for lunch. There's five of them. They're going to have a vote on what to have for lunch. The only problem is it's three wolves and two sheep. What's lunch going to be? All of a sudden, democracy doesn't sound that easy. And so the question comes up to this. Is there a truth that goes beyond the ability of people to decide what it should be? Is there a truth beyond our capacity to vote on it? And of course, generations and the history of humanity has said, yes, there are certain truths that we may not vote on, that they are true. Now, whether you say, well, what does this have to do with marriage? It's coming. Trust me. It's coming. Because the issue is, can we vote on anything? Can we vote on anything to be true or false? Like, let me give you an example, a tragic example, but an example nevertheless. Hitler. When, you know what the Nuremberg trials are? Nuremberg trials are when they were the disciples or the officers, main officers in Hitler's Germany were tried. And at first, when the Allies went to try them, the ex-Nazis or the Nazis would say, well, wait a minute. Why are you trying us for crimes? Is a crime something that is against the law? Well, yeah. Is a crime then have to be committed when you violate something that is against the law? So if something is legal, how can you accuse me of a crime? Now, in Hitler's Germany, it was legal to denounce and to kill Jews. It was legal. And the ex-Nazis were saying, well, we were only following orders, and we were following orders doing what was legal. So why are you calling us criminals? We were doing what was legal. And then the question was, so can any state or any group of people legalize by a vote whatever they want? Who draws the line? The people? If you say the people, then they were doing something that was legal. And so the Allies, it's very interesting, the Allies had to make a decision. They had to say, is there some law that is greater than the ability of the people to decide what the law should be? And they had to invent something. Something, give something that had existed a long time before, but they gave it a different name. And if you remember correctly, they gave it the name Crimes Against Humanity. Until the trial of Nuremberg, that had never existed. That was never existed. There was no law in the entire world that talked about crimes against humanity. And yet, the Allies said, there are some things that are so heinous that there is a law that is greater than any state law that says this is wrong. Unknowingly, they were recognizing something that the Catholic tradition, the Christian tradition, the Greek tradition, and many other traditions in the world had recognized. It's called natural law. That in the world, there is a pre-existing order. And that pre-existing order, for us people of faith, is the way that God established the universe. And no matter what we say or do, we may not invent laws that go against the laws of nature, the way that God created us. That's what's called natural law. That's why the framers of the Declaration of Independence were able to say, this is self-evident. And why? Because they were Christians. Because they could see the self-evident that God had created people to be equal in dignity, that we have a right to freedom, we have a right to seek happiness. We have that right. And so they say, of course, that's the way God made us. Now, the question then becomes, where do you draw the line? Let's get back to marriage, because Jesus is talking about marriage. What shall marriage be? What shall marriage be? Is marriage something that we get to decide? Or is there a pre-existing standard for marriage? And what has happened, and it's happening throughout the world, is that this generation is deciding that what has been binding in the ancient world all the way back in all cultures, that a marriage is between a man and a woman, that can be changed by the way we want to vote. And what, if you heard it today in the gospel, it's very simple. Jesus was very clear. From the beginning of creation, I want you to notice, it's not from the time you get religion. From the beginning of creation, God made the male and female. Therefore, what God has united, no man may divide. Now, what Jesus is saying is what is true, not just because he said so, but because what he said was the way that it was God created the world. God created the world. If you look at men's and women's bodies, we are meant to be complementary. You can see it in nature. And the question really comes down to that. Are we in charge totally of everything that has to do with being human? And do we have a right to make laws that change the nature of creation? And what the Christian tradition, the Muslim tradition, the Buddhist tradition, all of the traditions of the world are saying, no, we don't. So, from the Christian perspective and also from a very basic human perspective, we don't have that right. And if you think about it, if we start taking the idea that we have a right to do whatever the hell we want to do, all of a sudden, you take the risk that humanity could decide some things that are awful, like they did in Nazi Germany. So, I'm not going to go into philosophically deeper than that. Whenever I do a wedding for a couple, I always remind them, your marriage does not belong to you. It belongs to God. Right? It belongs to God. Now, I'm not saying every marriage is going to work. There are marriages that's a tragedy. Divorce, by the way, divorce is not a sin. Divorce is a tragedy. Now, when divorces occur, what basically we say as disciples of Jesus, a person is not yet free to marry again unless they receive what's called an annulment. What's an annulment? An annulment is the understanding that let me give you this basic little situation that's very simple. If I get a gun and I grab a woman from this congregation and a man from this congregation, and I make you stand up here, and with the gun pointed at you, I say, I'm a Catholic priest. You are now to repeat after me. I take you to be my husband. I take you to be my wife. And they're going, uh-huh, uh-huh. And they repeat after me. Did they technically have a wedding? Yes, they did. They were married in a church by a Catholic priest. And they said the words, is that a marriage? No. Why? Because part of the definition of marriage is that you have to do so freely. And they didn't do it freely. Now from that, you can all of a sudden start taking the mistakes that people make of getting into a marriage that they should never have gotten into. And so what the Catholic Church says is, we presume all marriages are valid before God's eyes. But we understand that periodically people get into situations that for many different reasons in God's eyes, they were not valid. And that's what's called in the Catholic tradition, that the Catholic Church looks inside the marriage and say, wait a minute, that's not what God intended. That's not what God intended. And so what's the basics of today? Basics of today is that there are things in our lives that are not under our control. I don't care how much we vote on them. There are things that come pre-designed by God. And every society has to live within those pre-designed by God. You know, this is a technicality, but if you want to learn it, I find it helpful and useful. There are two types of democracies. That's what's called absolute democracy and procedural democracy. Absolute democracy is when everything that's up in the air, we get to decide. Doesn't matter what it is. If we don't like blonde people, is there any blonde people here? Ooh, there's one over there. We don't like blonde people, then we could pass a law that blonde people have no right to live. If we all voted on it, yeah, we don't like blonde people, well, they're all gone. Okay? But notice what happens. We get to decide anything because there's nothing that is a given. And we have been created into a world that is already governed by God's laws. And we have no right to violate those things. That's what's being said in the gospel. And Jesus is making it very clear. So that's why, for example, whenever you hear issues, sometimes, you know, when I go on the radio, I get calls all the time of, why are you talking about religion ought to stay away from social issues? You have no business commenting on social issues. Yes, we do. Because it's not about the separation of religion from our public life. It's a separation of church and state. That's a different thing. Who were the great abolitionists who ended slavery? Who, the civil rights? Martin Luther King, what was he? Was he a lawyer? Was he a doctor? He was a pastor. And because all of these things have their roots in a religious understanding of reality. And so, this gospel is a reminder for us that religion doesn't stay in the little corner. A lot of people would like to see religion in a little corner that doesn't have anything to do about social issues. But Jesus was very strong in saying, no, there are things that God made a particular way, and they have to stay that way. And we, as religious people, have not only an opportunity, but a duty to speak our minds as Christians in this society. You know, when it comes time, I mean, we just finished with this Kavanaugh thing. And I don't know what the heck's going to happen when it comes to elections. But let me tell you, you have a duty. And you have a moral duty as a Christian to make your voice heard. I'm not going to tell you how to vote. But you had better look at the gospel. You had better look at your life. And you'd better look at what's right and wrong. And we had better make decisions. Because if we do nothing, what is it, that old saying, all it takes for evil to triumph is for good people to do nothing. We have a duty to do that. And Jesus is reminding us of that. Look at the Pharisees are saying, what about this? And Jesus is saying, no, you have a duty to implement God's law. So, I think this was rather boring for you, but so what? Life is tough. I'm done.